Chapter 18. No prime immotile had a name. Names were derived from a communication system completely different from their species' direct nerve impulse linkages. They did, of course, have ways of identifying each other. Immotiles, even in their group cluster form, were above all individual, a factor that sprang out of their early history's territorialism. Alliances between them were built and fractured with reliable regularity in their planet's pre-mechanization age, when even the closest partnerships were liable to be swiftly discarded if an advantage could be pursued with another. Disputes in those days were always over the size of territory and the available resources, mainly fresh water and farmland. Little changed over the millennia. After mechanization flourished, the nature of the alliances altered as the demands of machinery had to be met. Although the maneuvering and ever-flowing tides of allegiance continued to be played out by the same rules of deception and force, there was one immotile that always managed to retain its preeminence among the rest of its species, always building the strongest alliances, always advancing itself at the expense of others, always holding its boundaries secure, always the most wily. In later times, the largest and most powerful of all. Although not named, it could be characterized by its location, Morning Light Mountain, a large cone of rock and earth that sprouted at the center of a long valley defined by rugged cliffs, rising hundreds of meters from its swampy floor. Such was the alignment of the high walls that the thick beams of sunlight that the irregular edges produced swept across the central peak only during the morning. It was the perfect place to establish a new prime immotile territory. At the time of its amalgamation, 7 or 8 thousand years before Christ appeared on Earth, there were thousands, possibly even tens of thousands of immotiles served and protected by their clans of motiles, occupying the planet's equatorial zone. They were primitive then, creatures whose long evolutionary sequence was only just bearing fruit. Sitting in the middle of their covetously guarded fragment of land, immotiles flexed their rudimentary thoughts by plotting against their neighbors. Herds of standard motiles busied themselves consuming their own base cells from muddy streams and tending the edible vegetation, while the soldier variant motiles started to develop as the stronger, more agile members of each immotile's herd were pressed into duty, bashing rival herds' brains out with wooden clubs. The little sub-herd of 12 motiles was sent out by its birth immotile, seeking a place where a fresh herd could be established. Such a new neighboring territory would be advantageous to the founder immotile. With a joint personality origin, their allegiance would be the strongest of all, at least for the initial years. After a while, divergence crept in. It always did. Morning Light Mountain still retained the memory of itself before amalgamation and true thought began. The sub-herd had spent days carefully picking their way down the valley walls, dodging rock slides and clambering over sharp outcrops. Now they bunched together as they walked through the rainforest that sprang from the boggy ground along the valley floor. Every daybreak a mist would slither upward from the lush vegetation, a legacy from the nightly rains hazing the air and turning the mighty sunbeams a delicate orange gold. They saw it then, a symmetrical cone rising up out of the shadowed land ahead, the only feature of the entire valley to be struck by light, fluorescing a brilliant emerald across the roseate sky. Sunlight glinted off tiny streams that trickled down its sides. Small black specks circled far overhead, wings extended, idling in the thermals, one of the few remaining non-prime life forms left in the planet's tropics. The four largest herd members pressed up against each other, allowing their nerve receptors to touch so that their brains were linked together. Their individual thoughts were virtually identical, the simple memories and commands issued by their birth immotile, but joined like this, their decision-making capability was significantly enhanced. Since reaching the valley floor, they hadn't encountered any other motile, or seen signs of a herd's occupation. The valley with its difficult approaches was easy to defend. Its size was capable of supporting 3 or 4 herds. One immotile with its herd would have an abundance of water and land, giving it a strategic advantage over the surrounding immotiles. As to the exact location the immotile should be placed, on each of the motiles, two upper sensory stalks twisted around, so their eyes could all regard the conical mountain. With so many streams, there must be a spring of some kind at the top. Such a place would be ideal for an immotile. The water would always be clean, unlike those whose territories were bunched along rivers and had to make do with water contaminated from upstream. They agreed then. The mountain that was drenched with light. Their temporary linkage was broken as they moved apart. The other eight members of the subherd were summoned. Upper sensor stalks bent around, so that nerve receptors could be touched. The instructions passed to all members. In unison, they began to march toward the mountain. Two-thirds of the way up, they found a large pool fed by several of the gurgling streams. The four large motiles fused their thoughts together again and examined the area with their extended intellect. One of them sucked up some of the water and found it contained a satisfactory level of prime base cells swarming inside. Their presence confirmed the site would be suitable for an immotile, subject to a few alterations. A host of new instructions were issued to their fellow herd members. The type of motile that had come walking into the valley was the most simple of all the varieties that the immotiles birthed, and as such, the most adaptive in the tasks it could perform. It had a pear-shaped torso of waxy white skin that measured over a meter in diameter across the base, with four tapering ridges of hard skin running vertically up its flanks. That quadruple symmetry was a constant within prime life. The motile had four legs sprouting at the end of the skin ridges on the rim of its lower torso. Each of them had a flexible support bone running down the center, wrapped with bands of muscle tissue to provide a considerable range of movement. Each leg ended in a small hoof of tough ochre gristle that could dig in hard on soil or even wood, not that they often climbed trees. Four arms protruded from the body, branching out 60 centimeters above the hip joints. They were similar to the legs in respect of their size and all-around flexibility, differing only at the tip that split into a neat quad pincer arrangement that was quite capable of snipping through medium-sized branches. On the top of the main body, four gill-like vents were spaced equidistantly around the crest, drawing air down into its lungs. Between them were the food inlets, mini trunks of rubbery flesh that had some independent movement. Motiles grazed on specific vegetation for the chemicals they contained, but mainly they sucked up water saturated with base cells. Both were processed in a large double stomach. The pap could be semi-digested before being regurgitated to feed an immotile. After full digestion, the residue was excreted from a single anus at the base of the body. Above the gills and mouths, the body's crown divided up into the four sensory stalks, which were the most pliable of all its limbs, capable of bending and twisting in every direction. At the very apex of them was the delicate nerve receptor, a thin impulse-permeable membrane stretching over raw ganglions. Slightly below them were the eyes, then a pressure-sensitive blister that could detect sound waves, a plume of thin, chemically responsive fibers that smelled the air, and a cluster of tactile cells capable of detecting temperature. For such creatures, modifying the area around the pool to their own requirements was a relatively simple matter. They had long since mastered the rudiments of tool use and quickly adapted sharp stones and sections of hard bark from the nearby trees. Using these as shovels and scoops, the 12 of them dug a shallow pond slightly upstream from the main pool, then lined it with stone taken from the excavated soil. With the work complete, the four largest motiles waded into the pond and once again linked their nerve receptors. This time the union went a lot deeper than simply connecting their thoughts. Their bodies were pressed up tight together, ready for amalgamation. The process was triggered by an internal hormone deluge brought on by the mental merger. Over the subsequent 5 weeks, they underwent a tremendous metamorphosis. Their four separate bodies slowly coalesced on a cellular level to produce a single entity. Where their skin touched, it softened and melted away, creating a single giant body cavity. Inside that, their brains fused together and expanded. A transformation pattern followed by most of the major organs. The muscles simply wasted away, providing a source of nutrition to power the other changes. Legs shrank until they were nothing but a circular series of solid fleshy lumps that supported the new large body. Arms shriveled and dropped off. There was no need for them now. Digestive organs stretched out and spread up around the new singular brain, like shoots of ivy twining around a tree trunk. Underneath the brain, there was a new growth. The reproductive system that until now had been nascent began to grow into fully viable organs. Only the sensory stalks remained the same, feeding the developing brain a dodecagonal impression of the world around it. At the end of the process, the new immotile prime, Morning Light Mountain, began to secure its territory. The remaining 8 motiles came and went continually, feeding the immotile with their regurgitated pap. They had been instructed to gorge themselves on specific types of plants, enriching their food with certain vitamin types. Triggered by the nourishment contained within its food, Morning Light Mountain's reproductive organs began to ovulate. The first batch of 100 nuclei plasms was discharged from its body into the water, allowing them to drift down to the large pool. Base cells began to congregate around them. By themselves, prime base cells followed a life cycle similar to amoebas. They absorbed food through their membrane walls and reproduced by fission, remaining a single cell life form that inhabited most of the planet's waterways. But they also carried the DNA for a lot more than that. It was the nuclei plasms that initiated the multicellular stage, releasing activants for new sequences in the DNA and switching off the amoeba stage sequence. The cluster of cells around the nuclei plasms began to change, developing fresh organelles that provided specific functions. Like any multicellular organism, the cells began to specialize. The immotile had a degree of control over the type of nuclei plasm it gestated inside its reproduction system. By consciously controlling hormone secretion into the nuclei plasm, it could dictate the size of various organs, and by doing so design the structure and composition of a motile. If it needed heavy work doing, it would produce a batch of nuclei plasms that would congregate the largest and strongest motile. In a time when its territory was under threat, nuclei plasm to engender soldiers would be released. The first herd of Morning Light Mountain's motiles began to wade out of the pond after 3 weeks of congregation. The existing motiles guided them over to the immotile, who touched its nerve receptors to theirs. Memory and instructions flashed through the impulse-permeable membrane, filling the motile's virgin brains with a compact version of its own thoughts. Over the first decades, Morning Light Mountain began to shape and fortify its valley. In those days, there were few non-prime life forms left in the equatorial lands. Those that did still inhabit the valley, such as the birds and a few rodent-like creatures, were swiftly hunted down and exterminated. No immotile would tolerate competition for its own resources. The wild jungle was gradually cut back, the swamps drained into a network of canals that irrigated the big ferns that motiles ate. Stone was quarried and used to construct a simple igloo dome over the immotile as protection from the elements and any rogue predators from other territories. Metal ores were mined, and fires were used to forge crude weapon tips. The congregation pool was dredged and lined with stone. After 45 years of unrestricted growth, Morning Light Mountain was reaching the limits of its management capacity. Over 1,000 motiles were at work in the valley, and supervision was becoming difficult. A second immotile was amalgamated to compensate for the shortfall. Morning Light Mountain's pool and dome were extended, and 4 motiles brought together a couple of meters away from it. While the amalgamation was progressing, Morning Light Mountain had 6 of its nerve receptors linked with those motiles undergoing the merger, pushing its thoughts into a new growing brain. When it was all over, the two were permanently linked by 4 nerve receptors, producing an immotile duo with a much expanded mental capacity and capable of organizing many herds of motiles. A new phase of productivity began. The valley, when properly agrarianized, was capable of supporting thousands of motiles. To Morning Light Mountain's disappointment, however, it took almost all of its motiles just to keep the valley maintained. 35 years later, A third immotile was amalgamated next to the initial duo. That was around the time it began to trade with immotiles of surrounding territories. Metal ores were exchanged for the use of soldier herds to repel a territory that was starting to encroach the top of the valley ramparts. Food ferns were swapped for hardwood trunks that made better spears and clubs. Ideas were bartered, chief among them the concept of ploughs and crop rotation brought in from immotiles thousands of kilometers away. It was the start of true agriculture for the prime civilization, and the associated revolution that the innovation always introduced. The amount of produce that could be grown by a motile doubled within a decade. Seeing the possibility of the concept, the immotiles began to experiment, studying how the plants grew, what soils were best. Morning Light Mountain itself was the one who worked out cross-pollination as a method of increasing yield and breeding new varieties. It was the start of the scientific method, and all that implied. Morning Light Mountain amalgamated its 29th immotile a decade after it began sowing crops. 20 years later, 1,000 years after it had begun its original singleton life, the number of connected units in the group reached 40, an unheard-of rate of expansion. Its linked brains were abuzz with ideas and thoughts as it observed its immediate universe with ever more scrutiny. On the edge of the tropics, prime immotiles were pushing farther and farther into the temperate lands, armed with their new knowledge and understanding of nature. Fire made it possible for them to live farther and farther from their original climate. Heated buildings, cultivated fields, canals, bridges, saws, and axes helped them travel farther and farther to establish allied territories. Inevitably, as they began to grasp the principles of construction and strength of materials, mathematical tools were developed to aid fabrication. For creatures that were essentially a giant brain, mathematics pushed them into their primacy. It was the key to understanding everything. They devoted themselves to it with a fervor that was almost religious. All the elements were now in place for the mechanical age to begin. When that happened, the pace of change was very, very swift. After 1,000 years, Morning Light Mountain was now a group immotile, comprising 372 separate units. Few had ever grown to such a size before. Its individual bodies had formed a living ring around the conical mountain. The spring that bubbled up at the top of the mountain was now channeled through clay pipes into the crown building that housed the immotile group in their entirety. They lived inside a single giant hall, with a vaulting glass-topped roof letting sunlight shine down. During the night, iron braziers were lit, keeping the inside of the building illuminated, allowing the immotile group to keep working, instructing their motile herds, producing their nuclei plasms, and scrutinizing experiments and projects. Little shower nozzles sprinkled the immotile several times a day, helping to keep them clean. Waste products were carried away via a network of culverts down the mountain, while dedicated channels swept nuclei plasm batches into the necklace of congregation lakes that had been dug below the building. The air outside still steamed every day from the nightly rains, but this mist now mingled with smoke from the furnaces that were permanently alight. Morning Light Mountain imported coal from several territories to the south, a hilly district where food was hard to grow. It was now cultivating two of the neighboring valleys, after a short series of wars wiped out the immotiles and their herds who used to occupy them. Control over such a huge area was difficult. Motiles needed to be constantly updated with instructions, and they lacked the ability to respond to any unexpected situation. Morning Light Mountain knew it would soon be subjected to invasions from the west by immotiles who were worried by the size of its territory, not to mention its aggression. Its use of newly developed chemical explosives to destroy buildings, dams, and motile herds was regarded with considerable alarm. That was the year primes found out how to use electricity. While some immotiles studied how to use the new power for lighting or engines and other industrial-based applications, Morning Light Mountain investigated how it could carry signals. Specifically, the neural impulses that nerve receptors exchanged. It took over a decade. Even for that much concentrated brain power, inventing an entire technology from scratch was difficult. During that time, it accepted strategic defeats, losing its two additional valleys and agreeing to unfavorable trade terms for its coal and other raw materials absent in the valley. What it developed in that interlude was basic electronics, from simple resistors and capacitors right up to thermionic valves. With those principles established, a whole new chamber was annexed to the Crown Building on the mountain, the world's first electronics lab, with 8 Immotile units devoted to nothing else but instructing the Motiles, who assembled the new systems, and ran experiments with them. It took Morning Light Mountain another 3 years before it successfully inputted signals to a nerve receptor. Primitive tactile impulses were first, such as hot and cold, which it followed up with simple black and white images from a camera. The images were something of a revelation for it. Although it could always see what was happening outside by summoning a motile and accessing its visual memory of events, such knowledge was always second-hand, time-delayed. This was instantaneous. Within a matter of months, the entire valley was ringed by cameras that constantly scanned back and forth across the landscape, allowing it to see its entire domain in real time. Another 5 years' concentrated research advanced its analog signal transmissions to a level where it could finally instruct a motile by remote. It would be decades until the electronics were sophisticated enough to carry the full range of nerve receptor impulses, but that first ability to communicate at a distance was enough to give it a massive advantage over the other immotiles. Morning Light Mountain began to expand its territory once more. Herds of motile soldiers, armed with explosives and rudimentary cannons, overran the two valleys it had conquered before. With soldier motiles trailing long multi-core cables behind them, Morning Light Mountain could react to the flow of battle instantaneously, easily outmaneuvering its opponents. Those first victories were followed up by a series of swift advances across the countryside, until its herds had established a broad channel of land leading directly to the southern temperate zone. The remaining immotiles reacted cautiously, knowing that holding on to such huge areas was impossible. It wasn't until months had passed that they realized their error as Morning Light Mountain consolidated its grip on its annexed lands. With a grouping that now consisted of over 3,000 individual immotiles, Morning Light Mountain was easily capable of congregating enough motile herds to occupy its lands, mining and farming them in an operation as tightly controlled as the original valley. For the first time, captured industrial facilities were pressed into service, increasing its manufacturing base relative to the size of its budding empire. With a direct route from its valley to the fresh temperate lands, its expansionist ambitions could now be realized. A torrent of motiles and machinery were dispatched south to exploit the new resources there, setting up the pylons and cables that knitted the whole edifice together. It took the remaining immotiles years to build the grand alliances that finally limited Morning Light Mountain's growth, although it could never be completely halted. In typical imperial fashion, Morning Light Mountain formed its own alliances as a counterbalance. Within another 50 years, all the immotiles had the ability to send their nerve impulses via cable and wireless relays. This development, in conjunction with new and powerful weapons derived from the Prime's increasing knowledge of chemistry and physics, led to an era of consolidation. The smaller immotile territories were invaded and taken over by more powerful neighbors. Temperate wastelands were colonized, with mining and manufacturing operations extending into the polar regions. It was only when nuclear weapons were developed that a kind of equilibrium returned. Fission and fusion bombs allowed the smaller territories to hold their larger brethren at bay with the threat of total annihilation. Spaceflight and off-planet colonies were the next logical development, and one that the Primes pursued vigorously. Morning Light Mountain was one of the earliest immotiles to send ships out to the asteroids and planets to catalogue their resources. Given the distances involved, the old problem of time delay emerged again. Direct electronic linkages were difficult to sustain. Control slipped, and without it, the motiles were utterly incapable of responding to any technological situation. They simply weren't smart enough. One of the smaller immotile groupings provided the solution. Cold Lake Promontory was desperate to secure further resources for itself and its herds, which made it willing to innovate to a degree further than the larger, more conservative groupings would consider. It amalgamated a new immotile separate from the main group, using an electronic linkage to integrate its thoughts. In effect, the new Emotile was a smaller identical twin of Cold Lake Promontory. Even with a time delay, their thoughts were shared. Divergence didn't occur. Cold Lake Promontory 2 was placed on a spaceship and flown out to an industrial module attached to an asteroid. The notion of a mobile Emotile was regarded with near-universal shock by the other Emotiles. They did, however, watch the experiment with obsessive interest. Cold Lake Promontory 2 supervised the mineral extraction processes and subsequent construction of a habitation section. More importantly, it maintained its linkage with Cold Lake Promontory back on the planet, remaining part of the group mind. Mineral and metal resources from the asteroid flowed back to Cold Lake Promontory's territory on the planet. Planet-based Emotiles dispersed units of themselves across the solar system. It was a space race of colossal proportions. Territories were extended to take in vast sections of the other two solid planets and entire gas giant moons. Breakaways were inevitable as wars and conflicts out among the high frontier severed the vital communications links with the planet, and Emotile units went independent from their original groups. In many cases, that was the cause of conflicts, as the planetary Emotiles tried to regain control of their lost space-based territories. The rate of the Prime Civilization's expansion across its solar system never approached anything like exponential. It would take millennia to occupy and utilize all the resources orbiting the star. But the group Emotiles were effectively creatures who could live forever, and many of them were planning for the far future. Morning Light Mountain constructed the first interstellar ship on one of its high-orbit asteroid bases. It was a fusion drive vessel. The Primes, with their logical thought processes and observation-based scientific research, lacked the mental ability to speculate wildly about such concepts as FTL. With Morning Light Mountain 8658 on board the starship, it took off toward the nearest star, 3.5 light-years away. The mission was supposed to be a reconnaissance, sending back information about the available planets and their suitability for exploitation. Morning Light Mountain knew it wouldn't be able to control Morning Light Mountain 8658 once the ship was outside the Prime solar system. However, it had deliberately restricted the machinery on board the starship, denying Morning Light Mountain 8658 the ability to establish any sort of technology-based colony. That should have ensured Morning Light Mountain 8658 simply scanned the system and returned. Morning Light Mountain wasn't sure what use it would have for another star system, but it couldn't ignore future possibilities. Knowing what was there would help it determine what to do about other stars. There was the remote option that if the resources of its own star system were completely depleted, it could move itself to a new planet entirely. One without any other Emotile group to contend with. The one thing Morning Light Mountain, or any other Prime Emotile, never expected was to find an alien species. All other animal life had finally been exterminated from the Prime homeworld during the last expansion over the temperate lands. They didn't think in terms of other intelligences. When Morning Light Mountain 8658 decelerated in system, it found an extensive civilization occupying the fourth solid planet. Unfortunately for the natives of the second star system, they were a benign species who advanced themselves through cooperation. Physically, they were trisymmetric, smaller and weaker than a Prime Motile. They were also individuals. The starship might not have had any manufacturing systems on board, but it certainly had weapons. Morning Light Mountain 8658 subdued a vast area of the new planet with nuclear and kinetic bombardment from orbit, and commandeered what was left of the alien's industrial base. It began an extensive research project into the trisymmetric creatures themselves. There was a lot for Morning Light Mountain 8658 to learn, concepts and ideas that both alarmed and intrigued it. Communication with sound, reproduction via fertilized eggs, biology in general, and genetics in particular, a field that provided amazing insights into itself. Research into their own physiology and nature wasn't something Primes had ever conducted. They'd never had the need. Fiction. That was a strange one. Art, entertainment, all nonsensical distractions to a prime. Morning Light Mountain 8658 began to build its new territory around the starship landing site, incorporating the useful ideas that the aliens offered up into its traditional concepts. Surviving aliens were treated like motiles and conscripted to help build the territory. 3 years later, the next prime starship arrived, sent by a different immotile. The firefight that ensued devastated half of the continent where Morning Light Mountain 8658 had established itself. Neither of the immotiles was damaged. They agreed to an alliance and divided up the planet. Morning Light Mountain wasn't surprised when its first starship didn't return. Interstellar travel was a huge unknown. It expected many setbacks. More starships were already being built in anticipation. None of the starships sent by other immotiles had reported back either. The starship designs were refined and new missions launched, all of which were swallowed up by the void between the stars. After almost a century of starflight and 28 ships sent to the nearby star, the Primes finally had one return. It was the most heavily armed ship they'd built, and the first to have a force field for defense. Morning Light Mountain had led an alliance of the three most powerful immotiles to manufacture the behemoth. Only its devastating firepower had ensured its survival as it was attacked by a swarm of warships on arrival. It had managed to capture a large chunk of wreckage from one of the attackers. The knowledge it contained was horrifying to the entire Prime home system. Not only had the immotiles controlling the earlier starships become independent, they had apparently incorporated alien concepts into their technology. Most alarming of all was the use of the new science of genetics. They were modifying their bodies, blending in alien traits to improve themselves. Their motiles were smarter and stronger, capable of making complex decisions, while the immotiles were sequencing refinement after refinement into their neural structure, advancing their thought-processing capacity far beyond their natural state. Machines were also being used to supplement body function, cybernetic additions that allowed immotile movement, and even separation from the group home. They were evolving artificially, diverging from pure prime. They would be rivals, and their new nature would give them advantages impossible for the original primes to achieve. The discovery unified the entire prime solar system into a single alliance. A fleet of warships were built and dispatched across the void to annihilate their enemies. A second, larger fleet followed. A third, the greatest of all. In response, alien prime ships hurtled into the prime home system, armed with terrible weapons. Before the ships were destroyed, the habitable territories on the outermost solid planet were completely wiped out, along with all the industrial colonies around the first gas giant. Hundreds of prime ships had been sacrificed in the defense. Then it happened. The strangest weapon of all was used. The enemy alien primes established a force field around the entire star system. Nothing could penetrate it. Not nuclear weapons, nor quantum field interference. It was impervious to everything prime science could strike it with. Morning Light Mountain and all the others were trapped inside, while the alien prime immotiles remained free to spread themselves and their contagion across the universe. There was nothing the original primes could do except repair the damage to their civilization, expand their territories across the frozen outer planetoids, research new weapons, and wait. 1182 years later, the force field vanished as abruptly as it appeared. Morning Light Mountain's outer sensor satellites detected fluctuations in its quantum structure, rippling across the surface for nearly an hour before the field finally lost cohesion. Almost immediately, every immotile launched spaceships from their asteroids and planet territories right across the Prime system. They accelerated hard, rushing to get outside the field's previous boundary line before it re-established itself. The eight that Morning Light Mountain had held in readiness for just this occasion were among the first to leave. With that action completed, Morning Light Mountain and its allies began an extensive sensor search of space beyond the boundary. Immediately they found a huge rotating spherical structure, 25,000 kilometers in diameter, orbiting along the ecliptic. The structure was larger than the home world, but with hardly any mass, so it couldn't be a planet. Yet it was emitting in every measurable spectrum and had a completely alien quantum signature. Four ships were dispatched to investigate. Strangest of all, there was no sign of the alien primes. Defenses around every planetary and space territory were brought up to their full capability, in readiness for the surely imminent attack. But no weapons of any kind tested them. There was nothing. All the alliances combined their sensor information. Everything remained blank. Morning Light Mountain was uncertain how to proceed. It had planned for what it considered every eventuality when the force field was removed. It could fight and flee. It had a grand alliance ready to build a fleet to exterminate all alien prime life at the second star, and wherever else they had corrupted. That the alien primes would do nothing was confusing it considerably. Its most powerful telescopes were hurriedly trained on the neighboring star for any clue of their activity. That produced the greatest surprise of all. A force field had encased the alien prime system as well. None of the Immotiles had ever considered there might be a second alien life, one that was more powerful than primes. Accepting the concept was a frightening thing. They watched the newly exposed stars with a considerable sense of anxiety. Still more ships were dispatched outward in a frantic attempt to establish prime life on new worlds where the barriers would not imprison them. 4 days after the force field vanished, the most sophisticated spatial sensors that Morning Light Mountain possessed reported a very unusual quantum disturbance washing across the system. The effect was traveling faster than the speed of light. Morning Light Mountain considered that such an event might signal the arrival of the aliens who had created the force field. The effect wasn't repeated, which left it deliberating how to respond. To warn the others and form the Grand Alliance to fight back against the attackers, or to attempt its own evacuation. Morning Light Mountain was still considering its options when its ordinary sensors showed it a fight between ships from Temperate Sea Island and Southern Rock Plateau close to a cluster of asteroid bases. Even now, when the Prime Alliances knew they had to cooperate to face their enemy, the old conflicts still raged. Expansion had been massive throughout the last 1,000 years, and resources within the Prime Star system were now extremely scarce. The pressure on individual territories was greater than it had ever been before. For the last 2 centuries, Morning Light Mountain had been increasingly concerned that the Immotiles would end up fighting a terminal war and exterminate themselves. It was a common worry. As a consequence, Immotiles had diverted more and more effort into building and stockpiling weapons. Almost a day later, thousands of sensors orbiting the home world picked up a microwave emission from a point beyond the second gas giant. The signal was crude, using patterns that had been developed for messaging long before the time when the force field appeared. A brief identification sequence revealed the sender to be Morning Light Mountain 17,735, who had been on board one of the early starships to visit the alien prime star system and never returned. The content of the message was short and simple. This ship contains aliens. There are many of them, and they are dangerous. Destroy them. The message repeated 10 times, then ended. Morning Light Mountain was puzzled. How had Morning Light Mountain 17,735 survived for so long? What was it doing on an alien ship? Why was the message so short? Not that it had many options remaining. A scan of the section of space where the message originated revealed a tiny glimmer of infrared next to a small chunk of cold rock. Morning Light Mountain knew of no prime settlement at those coordinates. Other Immotiles were already ordering ships to investigate the message's origin point. Morning Light Mountain sent instructions to its subsidiary groupings on the moons of the second gas giant. 4 of its most powerful ships launched on an interception course. Alliances broke down and new ones formed as the first 8 ships closed on the alien. Immotiles disagreed on how to deal with the situation. Some wanted to capture the aliens and their ship. Others were keen to follow Morning Light Mountain 17,735's advice and exterminate the invader. The alien started transmitting signals at the Prime ships as they closed on it. They were incomprehensible. No Immotile could understand it. Missiles were fired as alliances came into sharp conflict over how to proceed. With the lead Prime ship approaching fast and launching a missile salvo, the alien vanished inside a huge burst of spatial distortion. The surface-to-orbit transport ship descended vertically through the Prime homeworld's lower atmosphere. It was a large, blunt cone shape, although it made little use of aerodynamics to land. 8 fusion rockets were arranged around the rim of its base, roaring out slim, 2-kilometer-long jets of incandescent plasma. Between them, they produced 0.9 of a Prime gravity, lowering the ship gently toward the coastline beneath it. Steam began to swirl up from the surface of the sea as the wavering tips of the plasma stabbed down into it. Within seconds, a hemispherical tempest of radiant vapor was streaking up and out from the epicenter like a squashed nuclear mushroom cloud. As the ship sank down into the supersonic storm front, force fields came on to protect the fuselage from the maelstrom it was creating. The fusion rockets died away when the ship was only a few meters above the seething surface, and its conical base splashed down with a soft bump into the boiling water. Tugboats closed in and towed the spaceship back to the piers and loading bays that stretched for over 100 kilometers along the coast. This was the main planetary spaceport that Morning Light Mountain had built to handle the cargo flying between the planet and its off-world territories. Thousands of flights arrived and departed every year, pouring heat and mildly radioactive contaminants into the local environment. Nothing grew within 100 kilometers of the spaceport anymore. No crops or weeds of any kind, turning the land behind the shore to a desert of sodden, lifeless soil. Even the sea was dead, a choppy expanse of grey water with a thin skin of ochre scum. Once the ship was docked, a sub-herd of soldier motiles came on board. They were slightly smaller than standard motiles, with better sight and hearing. They could move faster as well, and had a much greater agility, though they lacked any long-term endurance. Encased in dark armor, they were 2.5 meters tall, with electronic sensors complementing their natural ones, and limb strength enhanced mechanically. Every arm gripped some kind of weapon. Under direct microwave linkage with Morning Light Mountain, they approached the 2 bipedal alien motile captives with considerable wariness. The immotile wasn't sure of their potential, so it was taking every precaution. The compartment they'd been confined to was heavily shielded, and they'd been under constant observation for the whole flight back from the asteroid fragment where their ship had been lurking. Physically, they had done nothing, remaining almost motionless for the whole time. Their suits, however, had been emitting those strange microwave pulses almost continually. When the soldier motiles came into the compartment, both creatures stood upright. Morning Light Mountain watched the process with considerable interest. Their legs bent in the middle, pushing the main bulk upward. They seemed to have no trouble standing still while balancing on only 2 legs. A great range of electromagnetic emissions were pouring out of the suits again, the usual fast, short pulses. Morning Light Mountain ignored them and told the soldiers to load both alien motiles onto the waiting ground vehicle. As the sub-herd moved forward to grab them, the taller of the 2 swung its upper torso limbs around, knocking their pincers away, and tried to speed past them. It could move surprisingly fast, but the soldiers were ready for it, and lifted its twisting body off the ground, carrying it down the ramp to the waiting ground vehicle. The second, slightly smaller alien motile offered no resistance as it was dragged along behind. Both of them were dropped into the cage. A force field flicked on around the mesh. Morning Light Mountain drove the vehicle along the road connecting the spaceport to its original valley. Long black clouds boiled overhead as they did ceaselessly these days. Rain lashed down across the road's stone and metal surface, warm water saturated with soot particles. The road was hemmed in on both sides by buildings of toughened plastic, shielding manufacturing machinery from the acidic rain. Big vehicles shuttled between them, carrying components around. Herd after herd of motiles worked around the huge blocks of industrial machinery, servicing and repairing. They didn't live as long as they used to, 2,000 years ago, especially in and around the spaceport. Many of them had sores and scabs mottling their skin from cold radiation burns. Limbs often trembled and shook from the damage that heavy metal contamination inflicted on their nervous systems. They ate from troughs filled with a treacle-like nutrient sludge that was processed in food factories scattered across the territory's farmlands. Sensor stalks twitched constantly and gave poor visual reception, degraded by airborne irritants gushing out of the refineries. In the mountains behind the industrial landscape, where the radioactivity was considerably reduced, fields cloaked every slope in a drab, unvarying gray-green patina. Plants struggled out of the thin, sandy soil, forced into overactive life by chemical fertilizers that were spread across the terraces by farming motiles and tracked vehicles. All wild plants had been eradicated from the planet now, surrendering their valuable land to the intense agricultural cultivation vital to feed the billions of motiles. As the vehicle carrying the alien motiles drove along the switchback road that led down into Morning Light Mountain's original valley, it passed through the strongest force field on the planet, one capable of deflecting nuclear assaults and beam strikes. Rain beat down upon the sparkling energy plain, flowing into rivulets that ran away over the craggy granite ramparts. Light did still shine down into the valley in the morning, though now it was a bruised grey twilight that leaked through the planet-wide smog layers. At night, the smog fluoresced a funereal khaki from the vast lattice of fusion drives that caged the world. Ahead of the vehicle, the conical mountain rose up from the valley floor. It was home to over 50,000 immotile units now, still the true heart of Morning Light Mountain, even though there were groupings dotted all over the planet, linked to it via secure landlines. The mountain had been transformed into a single building, with each immotile nesting at the center of its own chamber. None of them made physical nerve contact with the motiles anymore. Their sensor-stalk nerve receptors were all connected to an electronic network that connected them en masse to the herds as well as every mechanical segment of their territory. A battery of maser units perched above the valley ramparts extended the gigantic immotile group's presence across the star system. Below the building floor, the mountain was riddled with pipes and sewers. The immotiles were bathed in a gentle shower of clean water produced in desalination plants north of the spaceport and piped into the valley. Wastewater carrying away body effluent was flushed straight back into the sea, while water carrying nuclei plasma batches was directed into the moat of congregation lakes around the base of the mountain. The vehicle drove over a 6-kilometer-long causeway between lakes. The alien motiles stood upright in their cage. The fat sensor stalks inside the transparent bubble on top of their suits were turned so the two eyes regarded the emerging herds. Below them, the lake surfaces writhed as tens of thousands of congregating motiles squirmed against each other. Not yet mature, their bodies were partially translucent, with great globules of transforming base cells clustered around limbs and torsos, as if they were surrounded by lumpy jelly. Big pipes poured a torrent of sluggish liquid into each lake. Water saturated with base cells that were bred in a huge series of vats at the eastern end of the valley. At the edge of the lakes, motiles helped the newly formed up out of the water. Relay modules were attached to their nerve receptors, allowing Morning Light Mountain to fill their brains with its thought routines and commands. On the wide concrete apron ringing the lakes, herds formed up in long ranks to be collected by vehicles that would drive them to their work destination. Over 1 million a day were transported out across Morning Light Mountain's territory. At the base of the mountain building, a tall door opened in the cliff-like wall of stone and concrete, and the vehicle drove inside. This was the primary research area, where the immotile units had built facilities to explore every scientific discipline. The alien motiles were put in the chemical warfare laboratory, where they were sealed up in a cell that had an independent air circuit. Force fields came on around it, capable of withstanding megaton blasts. The cell was a broad rectangular room, measuring some 50 meters long, made out of high-density plastic and completely insulated. Morning Light Mountain had installed a lot of examination equipment inside, ranging from scanners that could review the creatures in their entirety to analysis modules that could sift through their cellular structure molecule by molecule. There were pens where they could be held between examinations, transparent cubes 3 meters to a side, containing water, various food bales, and receptacles for excretion. Lighting was full solar spectrum. One wall of the cell was made from a sheet of transparent crystal. 3 immotiles rested on the other side, sitting in pools of dark water, a gentle drizzle playing over their skin. One of them had a motile pressed up close, feeding it. All of them could observe the aliens directly with their own eyes as they supervised the examination process. Morning Light Mountain bent its sensor stalks over so it could gaze at the alien motiles as they entered the laboratory. It seemed to be a mutual arrangement. The alien motiles walked their lurching walk over to the crystal wall and stared back at the immotiles. Morning Light Mountain's priority was to establish a neural interface with the alien motiles so it could determine what kind of threat their immotiles posed to Prime. To do that, it had to discover the nature of their nerve receptors. Once that was ascertained, it could manufacture an artificial interface unit and command them directly, as it had done with countless millions of motiles captured from other Prime territories. Their memories would then be drained out into Morning Light Mountain, so it could see exactly what it was facing. 8 fully armored soldier motiles were in the cell with the aliens, along with 8 standard motiles. Morning Light Mountain ordered the soldiers to hold the alien motiles steady, while its own motiles applied various sensors. The alien motiles struggled briefly as they were grasped. The electromagnetic emissions from their suits began again. Morning Light Mountain tried a transmission on the same frequencies, ordering them to be still. It had no effect. Although there was considerable interference, the sensors were able to map out the basic layout of the suits. Their composition was an advanced shape-shifting polymer with various filaments woven through it to control temperature. The atmosphere inside the upper bubble was oxygen-nitrogen, regenerated by several small modules of intriguing design. Most surprising were the complex electronic patterns that covered the entire surface, indicating a great many components. Morning Light Mountain couldn't understand why something as simple as a pressure suit would require so many control circuits. It ordered the motiles to remove the suits. Under its direction, they applied cutting instruments to the surface and began ripping the fabric apart. As the alien motiles were exposed, so Morning Light Mountain heard strange sounds emerging from them. When the upper bubbles were broken open, the sound grew to extraordinary levels, making the motiles wave their sensor stalks away in an attempt to lessen it. The single fat sensor stalk on the top of the alien motiles was the source, an orifice that flapped open and shut. They also emitted a stench so strong that the motiles quivered in reaction. Morning Light Mountain hurriedly reviewed the cell's gas toxin sensors to see if it was a chemical attack. There were some strange nitrates effervescing off the alien motiles, but nothing lethal. It began to catalogue their profile. Even knowing they were alien didn't adequately prepare it for things so strange. Their skin was a pale white pink, with slim blue lines visible just below the surface. Thin fibers were sprouting from it, seemingly at random and in different colors, from brown to white. There were big patches of the stuff on the top of the sensor stalk, and smaller patches between the legs. One had tufts where its arms joined the torso, as well as a fine grayish fuzz on the front of its torso, while the other had neither. Physically, they had differences, odd limp appendages that dangled like half-filled bags. The larger one had a tiny trunk between its legs next to some kind of external sacs. Morning Light Mountain could see no practical use for either set. Lines of red fluid were leaking from the skin, corresponding to where the cutting implements had been applied. The smaller alien motile had stopped using its legs to support itself and was hanging limply in the soldier's grip, while the larger one was shaking violently. It continued to make the curious sounds as yellow water discharged from its mini-trunk appendage. Motiles collected samples of the red fluid and yellow water from the floor of the cell. The alien motile that had gone inert was placed in the large scanning unit. The image that arrived inside Morning Light Mountain was tremendously complex. The alien motile was densely packed with organs. Lungs, heart, and stomach were obvious, but it couldn't imagine what half of the other ones were for. The bone structure was odd, leaving some parts of the torso unprotected, although the joint system was innovative. Most interesting was the location of the brain, actually inside the sensor stalk. Morning Light Mountain moved the scan focus, trying to track the nerve cords to a receptor membrane. Try as it might, it couldn't find one. The bulk of the nerves left the brain to travel along the thick, segmented bone running down the torso, but they all branched into a tributary network that was distributed throughout the muscle bands and thin skin. Could the entire skin be a nerve receptor? Then Morning Light Mountain noticed strands of organic conductors wound through the skin. Many of them were integrated into the nerve cords, especially around the 5-segment grippers on the end of its arms. Now it knew what to look for. Morning Light Mountain gave the brain a more detailed survey. A cluster of minute electronic components were nestling inside the body at the base of the brain, with a multitude of connective threads joining them to the big nerve cord. The inert alien motile was taken out of the scanner and the active one placed inside. Soldiers had to hold it down as the bulbous scan tips moved across it. Where there was no bone beneath the skin, its flesh bowed inward below the probing tips. It started making noise again, a loud burst of high-frequency sound every time the tip pressure increased. Morning Light Mountain withdrew a tip, then pushed it forward again. The alien noise generated again. It was an interesting correlation, but Morning Light Mountain couldn't understand why it did that. This larger alien motile had a similar network of organic conductors and electronic components embedded within its body. Morning Light Mountain had memories of the alien prime cybernetics, fusing machines with bodies. But they had all been used to amplify physical functions. These seemed to have no external purpose. They were joined to the brain, but nothing else. They weren't links in a chain. Morning Light Mountain's trouble was that it had little experience of microelectronic systems. It produced simple processes to help govern its own technology, but its own mind always directed the operation of any complex piece of machinery with appropriate thought routines through its nerve linkages. Automation was not a familiar concept. 70% of its group brain capacity was involved in controlling technology, from simply driving a vehicle to regulating the plasma flow in fusion reactors. There were few independent machines within its territories. The most advanced were the missiles carried by spaceships, which couldn't contain an immotile. They used processors that had flexible algorithmic instructions, which were given specific orders just before launch. Otherwise, Morning Light Mountain ran everything. Machines served life. It could not be otherwise. Morning Light Mountain ordered the soldiers to release the alien motile. It did have the kind of equipment capable of analyzing the processors inside the aliens, but it was all in the physics laboratories. A batch of instructions was issued to motiles. They began dismantling the appropriate units, ready to transfer them to the secure cell. In the meantime, the immotile instructed the motiles to extract all the processors from the pressure suits while it observed the aliens. The soldiers had placed both of them in their pens. The larger one had folded its legs so that it was resting on the floor. It was knocking its gripper on the wall between it and the smaller alien, which was still inert and leaking red fluid onto the floor. Every few minutes it would noise generate. The fat sensor stalk at the top twisted, and it stared at Morning Light Mountain's 3 immotiles again. Both of its arms moved, the grippers forming shapes in the air. It did that for several minutes, then sank back on its folded legs again. The fat sensor stalk rocked about for no apparent reason. Eventually it began to examine the food bales. Small crumbs were broken off by the grippers, and it brought them up to the small twinned orifices at the front of its fat sensor stalk. Morning Light Mountain decided there must be olfactory sensors inside the little cavities. Some of the crumbs were discarded, while others were held in front of the larger orifice. A strip of flexible wet tissue extended to touch the crumbs one after the other. They were all dropped on the floor. Next it turned to the plastic cylinder filled with desalinated water. After dipping its gripper in it, it pushed one of the segments into its large orifice. There was a short pause, then it lifted the plastic cylinder and poured almost half of the water into its orifice. Morning Light Mountain completed its analysis of the red fluid. As it suspected, the substance was a nutrient with a high protein and oxygen content. The yellow water appeared to be a waste defecation. An hour later, the smaller alien motile began to move. The response from the larger one was immediate. It hurried over to the wall between them and began to noise generate in short, loud bursts. The smaller one was emitting a long, single sound. It flattened its gripper and pressed it over the long rip on its side where the red fluid was still seeping out. Morning Light Mountain began to wonder if it was badly damaged. On a prime, such a rip would seal up and the flesh knit together quickly. That didn't seem to be happening to the alien motile. Instead, the red fluid was undergoing a double transformation, coagulating and then crystallizing into dark flecks. It didn't think much of that as an integral repair function. The small alien held its body parallel to the floor and used both its arms and legs to walk over to the cylinder of water. It ingested some, and then fell back onto the floor, its joints losing stiffness. The equipment to analyze the processes arrived. Morning Light Mountain's motiles began reassembling it. After several hours, it was powered up, and the first processor placed under a field resonance amplifier. Morning Light Mountain was astonished by the complexity of the device, which was right on the edge of the amplifier's resolution. There were millions of junctions arranged in a three-dimensional lattice of quantum wire, each strand just large enough to carry a single electron. The processing power it contained was enormous. One of these by itself was enough to control an entire salvo of missiles. Morning Light Mountain had a lot of trouble holding a full map of the junctions in its mind. The effort was taking up the brains of a dozen immotile units. That alone was enough to worry it. The aliens clearly had a powerful technology in such devices. It was intrigued with the reason for developing them. Clearly, in this instance, the suit polymer must require an inordinate amount of control to hold its shape, presumably far beyond the capacity of the alien motile brain to govern. In another part of the giant building, Morning Light Mountain's electronics workshop began to assemble an adapter that could plug into the alien processor. There were several optical interface points. All it really needed was a module that would convert the processor's output into its own style of nerve impulses. Although useful, none of this gave the immotile a method of linking itself to the alien's brain. The memory of their strange body and nervous system hung in its mind, where it could be continually examined and analyzed. It simply could not see a natural way to access the brain. Given that, and the obvious lack of mental capacity, as shown by the lack of control over the suit, Morning Light Mountain began to wonder just how far down the alien motile caste structure these particular motiles were. They could well be a lot less intelligent than its own motiles, although the similar size of the brain argued against that, and the grippers indicated a high degree of tool usage, for which they would need suitable aptitude. Aliens, it acknowledged, were paradoxical in more ways than one. Given its overwhelming need to establish direct control over the brain of an alien motile, and the only connection it had found to that valuable organ, it didn't have a lot of choice. The small alien motile was clearly badly damaged. Its eventual loss was inevitable. Morning Light Mountain needed to analyze the electronic processors connected to its nervous system. If it could somehow interface itself with them, then it would have access to the alien brain. Two soldier motiles carried the smaller alien motile over to a bench, where narrow-focus scanning equipment was poised overhead. Clamps were fastened around it, holding it in place. High-pitched squeaking noises pulsed out of its open orifice. The larger alien motile was hammering its clenched grippers on the wall of its pen, also emitting a lot of noise. The scanners focused on the top section of the alien motile, and Morning Light Mountain located the electronic systems clustered around the top of its main nerve channel. A motile with a small precision-cutting tool began slicing through the intervening tissue. The alien's noise emissions immediately increased to a much louder volume. Its red nutrient fluid jetted out of the cut. Even though the three-dimensional map of the alien's biological functions was quite clear in Morning Light Mountain's mind, with the nutrient fluid pump organ beating away in a strong rhythm, it hadn't appreciated the kind of pressure that the circulatory system operated at. The cutting tool was saturated in the red fluid, which went on to spray across the motile's skin. Its heat was uncomfortable. The motile had to move away and stand under a small shower nozzle to wash it off. A different motile moved forward to continue the operation. The alien had stopped its squeaking. Now its orifice was emitting a sound like old wood snapping. Its body was straining up against the clamps. Red fluid continued to spray out of the cut. Through the scanner, Morning Light Mountain saw a series of impulses flash between the electronic components. All activity between them stopped. A moment later, the nutrient fluid circulation pump juddered to a halt. Electrical activity in the brain withered away. Morning Light Mountain instructed its motile to resume the cutting operation. Without the red fluid spray, it was a lot easier to move the cutting tool inward, exposing the thick nerve channel. Micro-manipulator grippers were inserted into the opening and carefully teased the components loose, breaking the minute and terribly fragile strands that connected it to the nerve junctions. One by one, they were subjected to detailed analysis. Three of the devices were for redirecting nerve impulses out into the complicated tracery of organic circuitry etched on the alien motile's skin. One had a very low-power electromagnetic transceiver built in. Morning Light Mountain was pleased to find that it could well eliminate the need for a direct physical connection to the remaining alien motile. The final device was odd, an artificial crystal lattice that had conductive properties, with a small processor attached. It took the immotile a long time to understand its function. The crystal was a storage system, a highly sophisticated version of the ones it used to retain command instructions for the missiles. In this case, the theoretical information load was colossal. It could hold almost as many memories as an immotile brain. Unfortunately, it was completely blank. As the alien motile died, it must have erased the information. The adapter arrived. Morning Light Mountain worked quickly, connecting itself to the transceiver processor and feeding power into the tiny device. A deluge of binary pulses flooded into its mind. It used the thought routines it had developed to control its own processors, running the sequences through them, modifying them to handle the new mathematical arrangements. At the same time, it observed the device with the field resonance amplifier. The string of numbers made up from the binary sequences made little sense, but it did see where they originated from, which junctions they came from. It carefully began to return the sequences, seeing what the result was. Most had no effect, but occasionally a segment of the whole sequence would activate a portion of the processor. Slowly it built up a set of crude control instructions. The processor seemed to have a lot of operation rules integrated into its design. When the immotile finally managed to switch the transceiver on, a list of possible transmission sequences flipped to semi-active status. By trial and error, Morning Light Mountain learned how to order them to flow into the transceiver section for broadcast. Although the binary sequences themselves were horribly long and complex, there was an elegant logic behind the device that the immotile quite admired. It used another adapter to connect itself to a second processor. This one had even more inbuilt operational rules. Once again, Morning Light Mountain patiently worked its way through the combinations, flipping functions to active status. It was rewarded by a deluge of output information. The most basic one was a steady signal that was repeated 500 times a second. Other functions changed the signal minutely, although its main parameters remained constant. The Immotile flipped the additional signal functions off and considered the basic signal for a long while, working through possibilities before it realized what it might be. It constructed thought routines to run through all the prospective formats, to be rewarded by a simple cube of 12 billion specific points. At this moment, over 1,000 Immotile unit brains were now devoted to interpreting the alien electronics and the binary number sequences they used. In all its history, it had never devoted so much of itself to a single problem. It flipped the first additional function on, and was rewarded by a string of symbols appearing in the cube. The remaining alien motile had become inert, lying on the floor of its pen. As Morning Light Mountain worked through the transmission sequences, one made it twitch and raise its fat sensor stalk. The cell picked up a reply transmitted from its embedded transceiver processor that the one now attached to Morning Light Mountain acknowledged automatically. The alien motile stood up and stared at the equipment that the motiles were operating. Its noise generated briefly, then turned to the immotiles. Its transceiver processor transmitted a long binary sequence, lasting several milliseconds. A whole series of inbuilt rules in Morning Light Mountain's device suddenly activated, opening up new junction connections and closing others. The immotile watched helplessly through the resonance amplifier as the processor unit effectively shut down. All the primary quantum wire routes making up the lattice of junctions were blocked out. Worse than that, the binary sequences used to accomplish the order were prime number based, those short enough for it to evaluate. Most of them were beyond its mental capacity to determine. It couldn't reverse the instruction. Over in its pen, the alien motile held one arm out leveled toward the immotile units sitting behind the crystal wall and extended a single gripper vertically. Morning Light Mountain knew defiance when it saw it, no matter how alien the species was. It used its own transmitter in the cell to replicate the sequence that had made the alien twitch and rouse itself. There was no response. New and different symbols continued to appear within the visualized cube as Morning Light Mountain flipped additional signal functions. At least that had been unaffected by the alien motile's transmission. But without knowing the actual functions that the symbols represented, the immotile couldn't begin a translation. Its chances of establishing communications with the alien had been reduced considerably. The immotile reviewed its shrinking options. There were only two sources of knowledge left concerning the alien immotiles and what was happening outside the prime star system, the alien motile's brain and its electronic information store. Morning Light Mountain had clear evidence that the alien immotile would resist any attempt to establish contact and extract information from its brain, and the smaller alien motile had immediately wiped its information store when it realized what was happening. Logically, the information contained within the store device was valuable. A soldier motile raised its arm and shot the alien motile through the top of its fat sensor stalk with a high-velocity kinetic projectile. Red fluid, sticky strings of brain flesh, and splinters of bone exploded across the pen, splattering the transparent walls. The second dead alien motile was placed on the bench, underneath the narrow focus scanning equipment. Clamps held it in place as Morning Light Mountain located the electronic systems embedded below the brain. They were all intact. The soldier motile shot had been perfectly aimed. The motiles began the extraction operation. This time, the electronic information store was almost full. Morning Light Mountain's preliminary investigation revealed the information was protected from access by inbuilt rules that needed activation sequences even more complex than the ones that had been used to switch off the transceiver processor. The tiny device was transferred to the electronics laboratory and placed inside a quantum interface detector. It took a long time to read the stored information block by block. But weeks later, the entire sequence was incorporated into Morning Light Mountain's memory. At the same time as the reading, It had been experimenting with the input channels of the wiped device for the smaller alien motile. The overall purpose was quite simple. Nerve impulses from the alien's primary sensorium were transformed into binary sequences, compressed by a series of algorithms and inserted into the storage lattice. It held a recording of everything that the alien had perceived. Morning Light Mountain derived an elaborate thought routine that would reverse the compression and transformation process, turning the stored information back into analog nerve impulses. It applied the routine to the alien's information and allowed the resulting data stream to flow into a single immotile's brain. The unit was isolated from the Morning Light Mountain group by a series of safety cutoffs, in case anything went wrong, and the alien thought routines began to leak out and contaminate the group. Dudley Bowes struggled in the grip of armored monsters as the shimmering blade stabbed through the spacesuit, puncturing both the plyoplastic and his right buttock. The tip slashed downward, ripping through flesh in an agonizing line of fire. Pain. Pain. Morning Light Mountain wanted to throw its head back and scream as the unknown nerve impulse slammed through 50,000 linked brains with the violence of a lightning bolt. Shock transfixed the immotile group as the naked slime-covered monsters tore and pulled away its coverings, inflicting brutal wounds across its belly and legs. It wanted to squirm loose, but its legs didn't work. The memory was pushed away from conscious thought, dwindling into the past, becoming bearable as the safety systems reduced the intensity of the impulses delivered to the main group. Morning Light Mountain's lung intake gills fluttered in unison throughout its circular cloisters as it took a juddering breath. Billions of frozen motiles all across the territory reoriented themselves and resumed their tasks. In orbit above the Prime homeworld, Morning Light Mountain ships returned to their correct flight paths. Industrial machinery, digesting asteroidal rubble, belched and reset their refinery modules. Pain. What an extraordinary concept. Prime motiles and immotiles had basic tactile senses, indicating pressure and touch against their skin. But this was a physical warning on a scale that took away rationality. But then, it made sense in a way. Humans were individual. Astonishing though it was, they had no motile-immotile caste. It was a civilization of billions of full-sentient entities, all of them in mild conflict with each other. In some cases, not so mild. Memory. The sheer intransigent idiocy of the university board. Every month, Dudley spent, wasted, hours of his valuable time in meetings that accomplished nothing but the perpetuation of bureaucracy and the status quo. His department was always overlooked, always underfunded, always patronized by the larger science departments. Bastards. Explain. Because this is worthwhile. This is the expansion of knowledge that has a history back to the dawn of human time. This is pure science, driven not by greed but by nobility. Motivation not comprehended. Memory. The Vice Chancellor spoke at length. Vocalization. Aliens communicate via sound. Self-memory. Fuck you! The alien Bowes screamed inside its pen, as Emmanuelle Verbicki lay strapped down on the vivisection table, blood squirting out of her carotid artery. Rot in hell, you motherfucking bastards! We'll nuke you to shit and kill your babies when they glow in the dark! We'll wipe you from this whole fucking universe! Not even God will remember you existed! God. Human ally. Memory. Written books. Hundreds of them. Thousands. All multiplying out from a few ancient and sacred texts. Stories of how the universe began. How its creator sent segments of itself to the human homeworld to promise salvation. Salvation that came in many forms for many different human alliances. Divine mythology that, as a scientist, Dudley Bowes knew was fiction. Like the woodland elves, which had turned out to be real. The Sylphon. What irony. More aliens. Classifications. Memory. Hundreds of worlds, each containing tens of thousands of non-sentient aliens. Several sentient species had been discovered by the Commonwealth as it expanded. Their status as hostile or allied could never quite be determined. and one non-life world, the SI planet. SI, human immotile. Explain. It's not a human immotile. It evolved out of sophisticated programs. It's artificial. Human thought transfer to SI. Immotile function. Confirm. No, it's not like that, like you. Some humans download their memories into the SI when they don't want to rejuvenate, when they've had enough of life. Paradox. Explain. I can't. It's not something I would ever do. People are not the same. We all have different motivations. SI involvement with starship flight. Memory. Distant recollections of news reports, blurring into one. Politicians arguing about paying for the flight. Nigel Sheldon being interviewed. Vice President Elaine Doy claiming the SI supported the venture, wanting to know more about the barriers. Never confirmed directly because the SI didn't talk to individual humans. At least not Dudley Bowes. Clarification of status. Inclusion on flight. Memory. From nobody to somebody within an instant as he saw the enclosure. Triumph followed by months of cluttered thoughts of the striving, clawing his way to get selected for the crew of the second chance. Surprising himself with the degree of determination and political maneuvering he accomplished. The suppression of all conscience. Alien prime involvement. Explain. Never heard of them. Never heard of you before the barrier came down. We were an exploratory flight. Science only. Message from Morning Light Mountain 17,735. Explain. You're wrong. There was no alien on board the second chance. Paradox. Explain. There was no alien on board. Our HICE radar scan showed the barrier was still intact around their star. Barrier construction. Memory. None. The barriers were in place before humans knew how to cross space. Humans did not build the barrier. Human Commonwealth. Memory. Hundreds of worlds, linked together by wormhole. Worlds of land and water and atmosphere. Warm worlds with clear empty skies. Worlds that would support prime life. So many worlds that the terrible pressure and conflict between immotile territories would end immediately if they were to become available to primes. Wormholes. Memory. Distortions of space-time that could reduce distance to no length at all. They could be made large or small. The ultimate method of transport. The ultimate method of communication. With immotile units across interplanetary and interstellar space linked through wormholes, there would never be divergence. With wormholes, Morning Light Mountain could extend itself across the galaxy, with units occupying every star system. It would never die, never be challenged from such supremacy. Wormhole construction. Explain. I don't know the technical details of creating exotic matter, but the equations are fundamental. Commonwealth location. Memory. Right in the core of knowledge that was the remnants of the Graalmond University astronomer Dudley Bowes, the name, spectral type, and stellar coordinate of every Commonwealth star glimmered like a precious jewel.